Welcome to Signals, the podcast where we step back from the hype to look at what's shaping technology. In each episode, we talk with industry experts to surface trends, question assumptions, and unpack why things work the way they do today. We're focused not just on what's new, but on the decisions and developments that got us here and what to expect down the road. Hi, I'm your host, Michael Dowden, and here with me today is Jemima Abu. Jemima, thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit about yourself and what you've been working on.
Sure thing. So like I said, my name is Jemima Abu. I am a senior associate product engineer at Case, an alternative investment platform. And I've been building websites since 2017 now, which is a crazy number of years. I'm also a certified professional in accessibility core competencies, as well as a Google developer expert and Microsoft MVP in web technologies. So basically, I like to go to a lot of conferences and talk about accessibility, and then people give me awards for it. So it's a win-win.
Sounds like a good start. You've got a great career in a lot of focus on accessibility. Tell me what it's like working in accessibility right now.
That's an interesting question because I don't actually work in accessibility, so I am just a front end. Good front end developer. Yeah. So my daily job is building websites using like front end frameworks. I mostly work with React right now, and because my company is finance facing, it does have an interesting approach to accessibility because we are not fully finance facing in terms of the user end user. We are just more of like connecting brokers and funds and that kind of thing. So it's like, I feel very passionately about accessibility, so I tend to do it on my own spare time, but it's not like I work in the field directly. So it's a very interesting field to be, because a lot of times I talk with people and it's either accessibility is their job or they're developers like me, and they're like, I just don't care about accessibility. So it's a interesting balance.
How do you feel when a front-end developer says, well, accessibility is not really my job?
Yeah. To me, it always sounds like you're saying it's not my job to build a useful website. Because what do you mean? You know, like if you're building an accessible website, and I think to me, it's actually interesting the definition of accessibility, right? Mm-hmm. We always say the general definition is like accessibility is building products that everyone can use, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea is everyone should be able to use this thing. So people always think, oh, if I can use it, then it works for me. It's like, newsflash, honey, you're not everyone. Do you understand? Like if you're building one thing and it doesn't work, even if it works for 99 people and it doesn't work for one person, that thing isn't accessible. That's the fact of the matter. So it is, whenever I do hear developers say, so it's mostly, it usually comes from a place of, oh, it's just not a business requirement, or it's not something that we have time for. But to me, it's just saying that you're not spending the time you need to be spending to make your website useful. So I don't know, better.
Yeah, totally. So I see this a lot in accessibility, where sometimes when we're building things, we get so caught up in just getting it out the door that we're like, hey, security, accessibility, all these things, they can come later. And the problem with that is that it's way more expensive and difficult to add on later, right? So do you run into kind of some of those problems as well?
Yeah, I think to be fair, it's not just related to accessibility, right? In terms of developers, when we're doing like accessibility, security, performance, at the end of the day, if it works, it works. Can it be better? Sure. But the goal is, let's ship this as fast as possible. And the issue with that is sometimes it's all right to compromise when it comes to things like security and performance, because like, oh, okay, if this thing is like 3 milliseconds slower than it could be, it's like, that's fine. It's not the end of the world. Let's just ship it. But the problem is like accessibility has fallen into that field where it's like, oh, it's fine if it's not accessible, but it really shouldn't be. It shouldn't be fine to deploy something that people can't use. So I think that is like an interesting, for me, I feel like that is the interesting divide with things. If accessibility was taking more, and to be fair, that in certain regards, accessibility is default standards, even though people don't think of it like that. For example, if you deploy a website and the text and the background don't have any contrast and you can't read the text, obviously you would not deploy that website. So that is an example of a universally accepted accessibility practice. It's that if you're deploying something, the text and the background, you should be able to see them clearly. Or if you have an image, you should make sure that the text has some kind of outline on it, so it's not just hidden in the image. So these are certain areas that people do think of accessibility as a default. But the issue is they don't think of it as accessibility. They just think of it as, oh, well, that's just common sense. So I feel like it would be really good if we got to a stage where like other accessibility practices were also seen as common sense in the same way that text being visible on the background is seen as common sense.
Totally. It seems to me when you see, and this sometimes even happens within people who are practicing accessibility, but even more among those who really don't know and they're just kind of trying to do what makes sense, they tend to focus a lot on the vision-oriented, the visual aspect of things without even necessarily thinking about the auditory or cognitive or even mobility concerns related to interacting with the website. Sometimes those don't get front and center
Yeah,
and
exactly.
they're thinking, do you feel like there's maybe some areas that get more focus than others?
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, the visual aspect is the major one that people think of when it comes to accessibility because people tend to approach things in the sense of how would they use it. So if I'm using my laptop, if I'm building a website, I'm thinking this is how I'm using it. I'm using my mouse, I'm seeing the things, I'm scrolling through. So I'm going to make sure everything works in that aspect. But then when it comes to keyboard users, screen readers, braille, like text to speech translations, it's like because I don't have to use those things, I'm not going to think about it that way. Now, me personally, I do love using a keyboard on my laptop. I don't really like keypad. I don't know what it is, but it just if I feel like it feels slower than using a keyboard. I'm just like, no, I want to feel like a like hacker man. I want to just get in there and use keyboards wherever I can. So that's why for me, it's very easy to notice like a lot of like keyboard failure or like lack of focus state or things like that on a website. But
Yep,
if you are
same.
not someone that you use that regularly, you are just going to default to what I can see, what is my primary sense. And that is kind of why we tend to get a lot more like visual aspects of accessibility covered, but not the other aspects covered.
Totally, totally. So, what is it about working like you speak at conferences, you produce a lot of content in this area. What is it that gets you really excited about doing this work?
Yeah, I think so. When I first started, before I even started learning how to build websites, I in my university year, my second year university, I stayed in a room that was called a special needs room. So it's basically a room for students with disabilities, and I stayed with two students that had visual disabilities. So one had partial loss of vision and one had complete loss of vision. And they would always ask me to help them like do like things on their phone, like check their email, go to Facebook, that kind of thing. And because their phones would have like these accessibility features enabled, every single time I had to like scroll a website for them, I remember thinking how like inconvenient it felt. It's like, why do I have to like scroll with two fingers, or why do I have to double tap with three fingers? With some websites, you scroll and they have parallax scroll, and it's like you just can't move anywhere. Sometimes you try to zoom in and the zoom would break the website. And I remember thinking like, oh, why are these features like, why do these features make it so hard to use the website? Why is the experience they have so much different to the experience I have on my own phone? And then I finally got into web development and I realized that, oh, it's not that these features are making the websites hard to use, it's that these websites were not built for these features, and then that is why the things aren't working. So for me, when I first started with front-end development, because I had that experience of like the inconvenience of using bad websites, it was like a lot of spites, basically. I was like, I'm so tired of using bad websites that I'm just going to make sure I'm doing everything in my power to make sure that everybody else is building better websites. So that was kind of
Yes.
like a
Yes.
driving force. And I feel like also the more you go in the accessibility field, it's crazy because like it's been years at this point and we're still talking about the same things we were talking about like 10 years ago. People are still putting on click hunters and divs. And it's like, surely at this point, we would just reach for buttons. Like, what is the why is this something that we have to go over again and again? So it's I think that is what the
Right?
driving force is, the fact that like I don't feel like there has been much of a change when I started compared to what's
Totally.
now. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're still reminding people about alt text buttons. And here's the thing that frustrates me. The button is right
It's so much, you are putting so much more work on
Yes.
you. Like, and I feel like the thing is, people always say that, oh, you know, because like if I do the button, I have to like get rid of all the styling. You're doing the same styling on the
Right.
div.
This is not I
All you're doing, it's the same amount. Frankly, it's a lot more styling because
is
now you have to factor
totally.
in like focus state. Of course, they don't care about focus state if they're putting a click event on the div, you know. But it's like,
All right.
I feel like whenever I give like a talk on accessibility or anything, I always try to start out with a button example, and I'm like, this is how much more code you need to write to make a div have the same level of functionality as a button. You need to factor in like focus states, you're throwing in tab indexes, you need to factor in like on key press, like all the key press handlers. Like, it's why are we reinventing a
Right.
wheel that already exists? So yeah, I'm very
This
passionate about not using button divs.
it sounds like we've kind of touched on some topics that may be part of one of your conference talks you're doing. I can't believe it's not JavaScript. You want to give a quick teaser as to what's about what that talks about?
Yeah, sure. So that talk actually did evolve from, it's funny how that talk evolved. Basically, I used to give a lot of talks on accessibility. And then one time I gave a talk on the evolution of JavaScript. And then that talk led me to start looking into like newer features that are coming out. And then I started discovering new features like things like details and popover. I was like, wait a minute, are you telling me there is a semantic element that exists that has all the accordion functionality that I have been writing JavaScript code for years? And I don't even have to like factor in like making things accessible. I don't have to toggle like any ARIA labels. I don't have to do anything by myself. Why are people talking about this? So
Right.
basically, I started doing a lot of research into like what exactly are the semantic, because I know people think of semantic elements like anchor tags, buttons, head, nav, footer. It's like those are like landmark elements, sure, but what about the actual functional elements? We have a lot of semantic elements in HTML and CSS that can give us existing functionality, and people just don't know about it. And it was the oddest thing to me, because I'm like, I remember when I started out with front-end development, like you would go on Free Code Camp or W3 schools or something, and it's like even the most basic of things, they still teach you like the simple ways of building things. So it's like if I Google how to build an accordion, the first example is showing me a div. It's showing me a div and it's some custom JavaScript code. And I'm like, at this stage, details has been like baseline supported for 10 years. Surely you should just be seeing the details element now. So yeah, that really inspired me. I'm like, there are so many things that I'm like, I can't believe this is not JavaScript. And I was like, I have to give this talk. I've been giving this talk for like, I think 2 years now, and it's a talk that keeps giving, because every single year a new feature is coming out, and I'm constantly, it's like, what is that? You know, there's that Greek mythology of the ship of, what is it, Thebes? The one that like they change all the parts of the ship, and they're like, is it still the
Yes,
same ship?
yes, yes,
Like, that's
yes.
what this talk has become. I have changed every single feature talk about in this talk. So it's like, is it even the same talk I was giving 2 years ago? But yeah, I think I'm giving that web day out in March this year. I'm giving a similar talk called Your React App Doesn't Need All That JavaScript at React Summit in Amsterdam in June. So, and then I think I'm giving this at International JavaScript Conference in London as well, sometime
Nice.
in June as well. So yeah, it's honestly a very, it's a hit at conferences, because I always have somebody coming up to me and being like, oh, I had no idea I could do any of that with JavaScript. People are like, oh, I just went to my code and I like, got rid of all my custom accordion components and replaced them with details, and they work so much better. I'm like, I know,
It's
it's crazy.
great. Funny how
Yeah,
that works.
funny how the web works. So yeah,
It's
that's always
and
something.
I feel like part of it is that we get so focused on rapid delivery and kind of just doing the work that we don't take the time to just learn what's out there and really explore our craft all the time. Do you
Honestly,
think that
and
that's maybe?
it's so funny though, because these things are so much faster. If you use a details element instead of even a custom accordion,
Totally.
it's so much faster that you don't have to do as many tests or like as much design, or it's so much faster than actually building it itself. But then people just tend to not reach for it. I feel like one of the reasons might actually be the browser support. The thing is, a lot of times when these new features come out, you hear about it. Like customizable select just came out recently, I think like last year or so, and then it's been supported across like I think Chrome and maybe Safari. But because it's not fully supported, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm just not going to reach for that. And then maybe in like 2 or 3 years, by the time it is fully supported, the hype has died down, and then people have just forgotten about it. So it's like, well, we just never ended up using it anyway. So people will still be creating custom drop downs, even though we have this new feature that should handle all of that for you. So I think, yeah, that is why, like, part of the talk as well. Like, the more conferences I can go to, and the more people are aware that these things exist, if I can change one person's code base, I've done a good deed. So.
Yeah, for sure. So, what is it about this space that has changed the most in the last couple of years? I know that you've got another talk, for example, that is putting accessibility into AI, right? And it's with AI, there's a lot of, I see a lot of people both trying to utilize AI for testing accessibility or for constructing things that maybe has problems later. Like, what are you seeing in that space right now?
Yeah, I think AI is a very fun field to be in right now. It's a
Sure.
fun field to be using. It's everywhere. You really can't escape it. So one thing I have noticed about AI when I started using it is that AI defaults to a lot of human bias. So a lot of the most popular components, right, they are built in a certain way that might not be the best way, but it's the most popular way. It's kind of like when jQuery was a thing. You know, if I'm Googling how to change a class name, somebody is telling me, "Oh, just use jQuery." I'm like, "I don't want to use jQuery. Just tell me how to do it in this thing." But because it's the most popular way, people just assume it's the best way. So that kind of is how AI works right now. A lot of the code that's generated by AI is what has been the most popular standards for the longest time, but those were not necessarily the most accessible standards. So what is happening is that now AI is just like repeating the human bias of not caring about accessibility. So if you generate code in AI, if you just tell it like, "Oh, build this website," or like, "Develop this, convert this design to code," it will most likely just do what has been the most popular standard, and then you end up with an inaccessible website. So that has been what I have seen as the most common thread in the AI tools that I've used. Unless you specifically tell them to care about accessibility, it's just going to generate an inaccessible website.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there a technique you found to mitigate this or work around it or
Yeah, so the thing with AI is like it's a very smart child, is what I will say. If you tell it what to do, it'll do it. You just need to tell it what to do. So if I'm saying generate a website, I can just say generate an accessible website, and it will literally just do that for you. Like just putting that one word, accessible, it changes the entire prompting of the tool. So what I feel like it would be better if accessible website was inherently default, because all websites should be accessible, because all websites should be useful. But because humans have not approached accessibility like that, accessibility has not been the default. It's usually been an afterthought. That's what we're seeing with AI tools now. Accessibility is also an afterthought. So for me, it's just simple things like just telling it, "Oh, make this thing accessible," or like, "Make sure this thing uses like a semantic element." Or sometimes I'll be like, "For this custom component, is there a HTML or CSS alternative that could achieve the same features in a semantic way?" So it's mostly just like talking to it. And for me, that has been the biggest, like the easiest access. AI tools are a lot easier to convince to make things accessible than developers, because they don't have to spend that much time on it. It's just like, it's going to generate the code anyway. Just generate accessible code, then we'll be fine.
Yeah, for sure. So one of the questions that I always like to ask people is, who is this technology for? And in this particular case, this is kind of a two-pronged question, right? Who is accessibility for? And who should be learning accessibility?
That's a great question. I think accessibility is for everyone, full stop. Regardless of if you have a disability or you don't have a disability, accessibility means building things that everybody can use. So I think a good example of how accessibility should be for everyone is right now we have a significantly aging population, right? So previously in the past, the life expectancy was not that high. So we didn't really need to think about, "Oh, 70 plus year olds, they kind of just scoot themselves on out." But now we do have people living longer. So if you're building technologies now that in 20 years the aging population is not going to be able to use, because something as simple as they can't zoom in on their phone, or they're not able to, like, the text isn't large enough for them, the contrast isn't clear enough for them, things like that, you are creating technology that you're building it to fail, because in 20 years this thing is not going to be accessible to the customer base that you have right now. So that's how I like think of accessibility. It's not just building things and saying that, "Oh, we need to like think about screen readers. We need to think about," of course, you need to think about all these things, but you need to approach it from the perspective of, "We are building this thing to stand the test of time. We're building it to last. It should last now. It should still work in 20 years." So that's how I like think about accessibility. It's building things that everybody can use, regardless of age, disability, like network, region, anything like that. Just build useful things and then let them take care of themselves.
Totally. And so, who should be learning accessibility?
Honestly, I feel like I used to say previously that, "Oh, accessibility is the responsibility of everyone," right? Because from the discovery stage with the client, right, it's like, "Oh, You want to like tell us who your client base is, tell us who like the target audience for this thing is. But in the same vein, we also want to help you avoid any legal ramifications. So we're also going to make sure that this thing can work for all these people. Going down to design, it's like you're building things. You want to make sure you're getting the contrast right. You want to make sure like the text is displayed in a way that's easy to read and it's not just all clumped together. Things like spacing, anything. Obviously down to developers because we're the ones that have to start translating that design to code. And there's a lot of like code involved in making things accessible, whether it's using semantic elements or making sure you have the right focus states or putting in like keyboard handlers and even going to QA and the end user and testing. It's like making sure that, oh, sometimes there are ways that you wouldn't think of using a certain website. And it's like somebody else is like, oh, but on this particular device or on this particular phone, it doesn't work. So I would always say like accessibility is everybody's job, but also recently, I would say more so the developer's job because now we do have AI. It's a lot easier to make things accessible than it was previously. So if you have, I think the biggest pushback I did get in the past is that they just don't have time for it. If a client gives you a deadline of like, oh, we have 1 month and we want to get this thing to production in 1 month, like accessibility is never on anybody's forefront at that point. You're just like, as long as it's working, ship it and get it done. You know, it's always like MVP, like what's the most viable product, like what's the least viable product that we can ship out, and accessibility is never included in that. But now because we have AI, it's so much easier to ship things faster. So we have more time to spend on making things accessible. So I think as developers, we have a stronger responsibility now to be making things accessible. Also, you don't even need anybody's permission to do it. Just make the code accessible. They're not going to go in and delete
For
the
sure.
accessible code. Like if you've generated something with AI, just make it accessible. Just tell AI to make it accessible at that point. And I feel like if more developers just like, it's just like a mindset shift. Just like make sure you are prompting your agent to make things accessible. And like you're solving half of the problems related to accessibility already.
Yeah, I think that in a perfect world, all of the roles on a project would be involved in accessibility. But this is also a case, like you say, where just one person doing the right thing can have a tremendous impact on the overall outcomes.
Exactly.
So, what do you see coming in the near future? Like, what are some of the changes that you are looking forwards to right now? Is it just improved standards? Is it improvements in technology in the browser, or is it something else?
Yeah, I think there's definitely been so many changes that AI has had on accessibility in general, not just related to web accessibility. So we see there's this app called like Be My Eyes. So previously it was an app where you could log in and like help people with disabilities carry out certain tasks. And now you have like AI versions of that that make it a lot easier for people to do these things, or even just things like generated. Like I noticed like in a lot of websites now, they will have generated alt text by default, thanks to using AI. So it's like even if you're posting something on LinkedIn, it generates the alt text by default. So you don't have to, because previously people would be like, oh, I don't know what's in alt text. Like they'll just put like generic things like a sign, a woman, full stop. You know, so it's like now you have AI being able to do all those things for us. And I think that's one way that AI does things really well. It's very good at, I would say, like human language processing. So like taking things and saying, oh, this thing is probably like a $20 bill, or this is probably a $50 bill. And that's really useful to somebody that has like visual disabilities and does not have time to wait for somebody else to help them verify things, or even just like the alt text generation or text to speech outputs, like all these things. So I think there's a lot that AI has been doing in the field of accessibility that is very useful and very beneficial when it comes to web accessibility specifically, because we're getting a lot more AI generated websites. I think the issue is it's not so much an AI issue as a human issue. People have just not cared about accessibility in the past, so they don't care if the AI is generating inaccessible code. If we did care about accessibility, the AI would also be generating accessible code. So I think it always starts from like the awareness angle, like getting humans to care more, and then AI will follow suit. So I see it.
So, there was a project that I was on not that long ago related to accessibility and education. So it was an education company producing content, and the limitation we ran into for the AI generation of alt text in that situation is it did a great job of describing the image, and they even managed to find some models that were specifically trained on like engineering diagrams, for example, and it would do an amazing job of describing the diagram, and we found that it was actually doing a better job in a lot of cases than the humans were doing of describing those images, right? Which is awesome. The thing we found that it couldn't do is contextualize what Why am I showing you this image in the context of this educational material, right? What is the, how is this image supporting the content? And so those are the cases where we had to go in as humans and kind of edit that and make sure it was reflective of those types of things we were trying to convey.
That does make a lot of sense. Kind of thing we say about like AI just being like a smart child. It's like it can tell you things, but it might not actually understand the relation between it. So it's like, yes, it's able to describe like this perfectly complex engineering diagram, but can it tell you
Right.
why it's in this file specifically? It doesn't know.
Exactly.
I think it's great because it is things like that. Like there is still human input needed for these things to work perfectly. So it's like at this stage, AI is not the end all solution. AI is a tool that humans can then use to produce better output than we were producing previously. That's just like, that is my whole take on it. Like, I don't think AI is going to solve every single accessibility problem in the world. I think humans still have a very strong role to play there, but AI is a tool that would definitely help us
Oh,
do these things a lot faster than we have
absolutely.
been doing in the past.
Oh, like in that situation, I don't even know. We had tens of thousands of images that had been produced that had not ever had alt text. Like,
Oh.
it was almost an impossible task to just do it all by hand, right?
Exactly.
So it made it so that we could do a thing that otherwise would have been just prohibitive.
Exactly. And it also like it frees up so much of your time too, because like now you've done that, so it's a lot easier. I think that's another reason I really like AI. It's a lot easier to fix what somebody else has done than to start something. So like if I want to like generate something, I'll tell AI like generate this thing, like create this email or this article, and then I'll go in and be like, yeah, no, I would never say that. I don't like how that sounds. And for me, it's a lot easier because you already have like this boilerplate, and it's like, I can actually do the work now. I don't have to think about how to like set everything up. So.
Well, and like video captions, YouTube has been producing automatic video captions for years and years, and it honestly does a really good job. And it turns out that for I do a lot of streaming and stuff. So for a 1 hour video, it would take 5 hours to produce a transcript by hand, especially when you're trying to get all the timings in and everything, right? At least. But with an automatic transcript, it produces the text, it sets the timings. All I have to go through is proofread and correct the words that got wrong. It
Exactly.
takes like 10 minutes
Exactly. It's
to,
so much
right?
easier to correct.
So it really makes it so that we can do so much more with the use of good use of those tools in a way that is not encroaching on anybody, right?
Exactly. Because like even if you were going to outsource it, that is still 5 hours of somebody else's time. Like,
Right.
it's
Well,
such a long time to do anything. So.
it's time and money you can't be spending on other things or making other things accessible or producing other value in other ways, yeah. So one of you kind of touched on this a little bit, but one of the excuses I hear about not just accessibility, but all kinds of different design decisions in software is, well, we're a data-driven company and our data says we don't have visually impaired users, or we don't have mobile users is one that I heard once. And they showed me the data. They're like, see, none of our users is using mobile, so we don't have to focus on this. And I said, have you ever actually sat down and tried to use your software on mobile? Well, no. Why would I do that? I just sit on my computer. Let me explain to you why your data says nobody's using mobile. It's because they can't accomplish a single one of the tasks they need to be able to do. So your data is simply reflecting the state of your product. It's not an indication in any way, shape, or form of who your audience can, would, or should be if you were doing your job correctly.
Yeah, I think it's always so funny because it's like, it's how do you not see the relation here? They're like, oh, nobody
Right.
uses this thing on mobile. Nobody can. Like people try to go on and it doesn't work, so they leave immediately. It's not like people are like, oh, I love getting on my laptop to use yours. You know the number of people, like, do you know everybody has a phone right now? If you're telling me out of everybody in the world, nobody has ever thought, let me visit your software on my phone that I have in my hand at all times. How do you not see that's a problem? That definitely is a thing that comes up a lot. People always use data to back things. They're like, oh, we don't have users that use this browser, so we're just not going to account for it. I'm like, do you not have users that use that browser, or do people that use that browser are just not able to use your site, so they go somewhere else. Like you are, it's kind of like that thing where they get like statistics from a very niche group, and it's like, oh, we went to the streets of London to do a poll on like the best British food. Obviously, the best British city. Obviously, people will say, no, you're asking people in a specific environment what they think. It's like you need to broaden your horizons, and I think that is actually something we see a lot in accessibility. It's like, oh, we don't have. I'm like, even if you did have users using screen readers, you wouldn't know because they're not able to use the site, so they leave once they get to your site, or they're just not using your product at all because somebody else has advertised how much they care about accessibility. So somebody that has a disability is like, oh, I'm just going to go there, and I'm not going to bother coming to your product at all. It's like you are inherently alienating a specific part of your user base just because you don't care about this thing. So to me, it's interesting because I think business people are so focused on like increasing revenue, getting more users and everything. But then whenever it comes to accessibility, they're like, oh, we don't care about that sect of people. There's like one point, I
What?
think it's 1.7 billion people in the world that have some form of disability or the other. And you're saying you
Oh
don't
yeah.
care about 1.7 billion. Do you know how much money that is? That is crazy to me.
Well, and the wild thing is that statistic is effectively people that cannot use tools without assistive technology. There's billions more people that kind of would benefit from it, right?
Exactly. It's like there's not, I have never seen a case where making a website accessible made it worse for people. You know,
No.
it's like, oh, we put like focus outlines and now it looks ugly. Just make better outlines. Like that's a skill issue. You don't have to use like the large glaring blue outline. You can just have nicer looking visual outlines, and your regular users will appreciate them as well. Because even like power users, people that just love like powering through sites and seeing how fast they can get things done, it's always useful to know what part of the screen you're on, even if I click a button or something, or I'm on my phone or anything. So it's like these things, like when you make a website accessible, the fact that it can be used for one person, even in real world, like the fact that we have ramps now, it's great for people with wheelchairs, but it's also great for people with luggage. Because if you're trying to go somewhere and you're coming from the airport, like every time I'm coming from the airport, I always check the tube stops and make sure the stop I'm using has a lift because I'm not dragging my luggage up the stairs. So it's like, by if you were like, oh, we just don't get people with wheelchairs using the subway, so we're not going to put lifts anywhere. Now I have a lot luggage. What am I supposed to do? Like just lug it up the stairs. So the fact is, when you make things that everybody can use, it works better for everyone. But it's crazy to me like how people never approach it from that angle. They're just like, oh, this the way it works now is fine. So we're not going to bother improving it on the off chance that it can make it better for somebody else because we don't think those people are using our software anyway. It's very
Well, and one of the psychological principles at play is that people tend to in they take their own view of themselves and how they interact with things, and they project that onto other people because that's their own experience. And it's a perfect example. Like it's not weird that we do this, but it is a problem that we don't kind of try to expand our horizons. And it's exactly why diversity is such an important aspect of building software, and especially about building UIs and accessible software.
Exactly. I call it it's the classic it works on my machine syndrome. Like every developer, you just think that, oh, this thing works for me, so it must be fine. And then it goes, the user is like, oh, I can't use this thing because of this and that. And you're like, oh, it works on my machine. And it's like, are we going to ship your laptop to the client? No. So like make it work for everyone. You know, that's the general idea. And I think that is why like awareness is just a very important part of accessibility, because the fact is a lot of times people don't even know that there are other situations they could be thinking about when building certain things. So some people might think that, oh, I've covered all the bases. I've made sure like it has light and dark mode. I've made sure I can click it using a keyboard. And then somebody comes up and they're like, oh, but like how's the text-to-speech functionality? Or what if I'm using like a Braille keypad or something like that? And then they're like, I don't. No, so I think that is the thing that accessibility is, because to be fair, it is a very daunting task if you think about it. The fact is, so many people in the world have so many kinds of disabilities that it would be nearly impossible to factor all of them in when you're building a website. Some people have like disabilities that are directly contrasting to somebody else, because you think that, oh, I'm doing high contrast for this reader, it can then make it harder for somebody that's like maybe they're colorblind or something. So what you think is high contrast is actually like messing like the vision for them. So it's Accessibility is a very like complicated field if you decide to think about it like that. But what I say is like, as long as you care, as long as you're meeting the very basic minimum, the fact is like, okay, yes, maybe it will not be perfectly accessible for 100% of the world, but as long as you're just trying to target, okay, let's just make sure it works for screen readers. Let's just make sure like the keyboard functionality is there. Let's make sure it has like focus states. As long as you target like the very basics, like that is, you're doing a lot
Right.
better than most people out there in the first place. So.
Well, and one of the things that I try to get people to do when they're starting on an accessibility initiative, people are so terrified to publicize the state of their accessibility when they know they're not doing well. I'm like, you've got to. You have to explain, look, here's the current state. Here's the what we're currently working on to try to make things better. Here's the effort we're putting into it. Here's how you can contact us to let us know about problems. And that should be the first thing you do because you really want to open a dialogue. Because if you have a user base that is impacted by your design decisions, you've got to know that and you have to be welcoming and inviting as kind of the first part of doing that.
Yeah, exactly. I think like what is like having the your accessibility like just a, like a manifesto or a policy on your site is also a really good way of improving your accessibility because it might be something as simple as you just publish a one-page document and you're like, oh, we've made sure that this thing is like WCAG compliant, like WCAG 2.0. These are the features that it met. If you have any issues, send them in here. So you don't even have to publish like, oh, this is every single thing we've done. You could just say like, these are what requirements we need, and if you have any issues, just contact us here. And then that also opens a dialogue for your clients or your users to then say that, oh, actually, I would prefer if you had this thing, or this one thing didn't work when I was using this tool. And then it's easier because I think the thing is with companies, they also do, they value customer feedback more than developer inputs. So if I'm saying, oh, we need to make sure this thing is accessible because of these people and those people, it's going to be like, yeah, but we don't have time, so just get it done. But if even one customer should say that, oh, I can't use this one thing, then it's like, okay, now it's an issue. Because this is affecting the bottom line of the business. So I think having an accessibility policy is just like, it's a great starting point, even if you don't know where to start from.
Yeah, for sure. So you've touched on the standards, WCAG. Obviously, the W3 is involved in a lot of this. What I find some developers don't realize when you're having these conversations is how far back accessibility initiatives on the web go. And it's literally to the very creation of the very first standards. W3 from the very beginning, HTML was designed specifically to be an accessible web standard. And we've been using that whole time. So the history of the web is very interesting with accessibility because it has always been a first-class citizen. And I think that it's only more recently that we've really gotten pushback on that.
And I blame JavaScript for that.
Seriously, though, I think you're right. It's actually the introduction of JavaScript on the web.
Because it's before JavaScript, right? Everything was semantic. We were throwing tables everywhere. That was that the best way? No, but at least your data will, if in your head you're like, oh, I need to present data, it's going to be in the table. I need to present like I have my header, I have my footer, I have my nav. So things like they made sense. You could see like the structure, you could see the semantic elements. And then we got JavaScript, and it was like giving candy to a 3-year-old. We just went from there. We were like, we have no limitations. We can do whatever we want. Like we don't even need the marquee tag anymore. We can make our own custom marquees in JavaScript now. So it's like we had so much fun when JavaScript was introduced, and then we forgot about all the semantics that previous. Because when I like with the advance of like CSS, it's like people were like, oh, this is like people were making like acid trip websites because all those like
Sure.
Space Jam themes are like.
Oh, yes.
People have like all those counters on their website. Like web development was fun then. The goal was just like getting out of fun websites. And the thing is like because companies then they didn't really care about like performance or things. It was like you're just displaying a static page to your users. And then the idea is that you get them to call you on the phone or something. But then JavaScript came and it's like suddenly everything is web first. People can contact you directly. You never have to like go and see anybody in person. The web has improved so much. But then because JavaScript didn't have those like semantic elements in itself, like JavaScript cares about a lot of other things like performance and speed and not typing strictly. But in terms of the actual accessibility, I think there definitely was a shift in how the web was then approached because JavaScript was no longer supporting HTML. HTML was just like the end result of JavaScript because now we have React and we're just writing JavaScript directly. I also blame React for a lot of the divs instead of buttons thing
Oh,
because
yeah.
now people will build a button component and it's a div inside. It's like, it's a button component. Just use a button. We don't need to do this.
Right.
So yeah, I think it's definitely like it was kind of like JavaScript kind of just flipped web development on its head, you know? So it's like things that were standard before are no longer standard now because we just go in the framework route, which is another reason why I still do like giving my talk on using, let's going back to use HTML and CSS for things that we should be using HTML and CSS for
Yes.
because they do it
Yes.
so much better than JavaScript. And we're saving so much time too.
Oh yeah. Well, you see, JavaScript causes accessibility problems, it causes security problems, it causes performance problems. I mean,
But you can't submit a form, so I mean the trade-offs.
Oh, goodness. So, what external forces do you see currently kind of changing the shape of web development in general and kind of building accessible websites in particular?
Yeah, well, like we said, the major shift happening right now is definitely the AI movement. So in terms of AI shifting things, we're seeing things like Figma Make for like generating design. You'll have like all your millions of vibe coding tools there. Like, so people are like, oh, we don't even need web developers anymore. So I think the shift is it's getting to a stage where it's seeming like people are starting to build websites for themselves. And that is an interesting approach, actually, because if the idea is at the end of the day, you don't need to care about other tools because you're only building tools for an audience of one, then it's like that actually might be an interesting approach to accessibility because people will be building tools that target their own needs specifically. And if they're not thinking about shipping it out, then they don't need to care about how other people are going to use it. So I think that might be, it might also have an advantage in that we might have more people starting to care about like how they're using these tools. Because if it gets to a stage where I've built this thing and it's working for myself, and now I have to start thinking, oh, how am I going to ship this thing so that other people can use it? It's also going to start prompting me to think of how are other people using these tools? And that is kind of the basis of accessibility, just thinking of how other people are using these tools. So I think there's definitely an AI shift. I think we're also seeing a lot more like in terms of the vibe coding, we're also seeing people being a lot more responsible for the end-to-end process of building a product. So now somebody can be like their own PM, their own designer, their own developer, and their own QA. So it's like you have one person teams doing everything. So it's like that might also like solve the issue of having to have back and forth before you make certain changes, because now you don't have to convince anybody to improve certain thing on your code. You can just do it yourself. So I think there's like with everything, it's like there are ups and downs to it. Of course, it can just be people will be creating like terrible websites because they don't have an understanding of what actually the basics of a good website, but maybe we'll also have people taking a lot more direct interest in making websites better because that might be what is now the defining factors. Because if the fact is everybody can vibe code a website, what makes your website better than what somebody else has vibe coded using the same tools? It might just be your approach to it. So the fact that your website has like a perfect lighthouse score might actually be the force that drives somebody to use your thing over something that somebody else has built.
One of the things that I find interesting about this, and it's kind of one of my concerns a little bit, is one of the cases made for AI and development is it's kind of democratizing development. It makes it easier for anybody to do it. And that's great, but it's actually creating a massive divide between those who have the coding skill and those who do not, because you're going to see those with coding with a wide range of skills are going to know, hey, I need to make this accessible, I need to make this secure, have some idea how to test for that. But if you're coming in and you've never done any development before, you don't even know that those are concerns that you need to be aware of. And so you're going to be producing things that are far inferior and not even be aware of the challenges or the problems involved. And we've seen some early products go to market from people that didn't know anything about building products that were terrible disasters because of this. And so my concern is the state of accessibility going to decline for a while because of this? Because on the one hand, you've got it's really enabling those of us who are in the space already to do amazing things and work faster and better. But on the other hand, it's improving the ability for other folks to potentially introduce things that aren't there. Like,
No,
where
yeah,
do you see that
definitely.
balance
I think
landing?
it's an interesting thing because I feel like for every tool that has been vibe coded and shipped to production and they've made a bunch of money, I don't think they had a good developer. I think they had a good salesperson. Because what you were good at was selling the tool, right? And then when it comes down to it, you've generated the revenue and you're like, oh, I need to make this thing better. Then you go hire a developer to come in and make it better. So I think that is honestly where I see a lot of vibe coding tools going. Vibe coding is not, I don't think vibe coding is great for developers. I think it's great for salespeople because now they can make that the next phase that
Yeah.
we've always been talking about, and they
For
can ship
sure.
it and they can raise like their 500K in revenue, and then they can hire somebody to go in and make it better. So
Yeah,
that's where I see
totally.
it heading. But I also think that it will, at least from what I've seen, it's a good learning opportunity. Like we've seen cases where somebody is like, oh, their product like was revealing their API key and they were not aware, and like then they got hacked because they did not know that these were things that you needed to like, they didn't know anything about like encryption or like security or anything like that. So it was a good learning opportunity for them because once that thing happened, then they could go back in and be like, oh, how do I solve this? And now they are aware that these are the kind of things that you need to do. So I feel like it might be the same with accessibility. We there's like constant lawsuits related to accessibility. So I think it just takes getting sued once and then people just know. You kind of start to care more. When I used to work in e-commerce, we would have a lot of clients that they would come to us and they'd be like, oh, we had this website before and we got a lawsuit, so now we really need to revamp. And those people, they would be the ones prompting for accessibility even before we asked for it. But the ones that had never been sued, they'd be like, oh, it's not an issue or we don't care about it. So I think everything is a learning opportunity. If people are releasing websites that aren't inaccessible, it just takes one lawsuit and then they will get on it and actually start making these things accessible. So I think it's great that we are, I think it's great actually that the coding market, the divide is kind of shrinking down because I do feel like, to be fair, I feel like developers, we used to have a bit of a god complex. You know, you used to be like, oh, I write code, I'm better than people. No, you're not. You just put words on the keyboard. Let's calm down. You're not rocket science, you know? So I think it's great that we are seeing more people get into development, get into coding, or just be more excited about tech in general because of AI. Because one thing that I do notice that is happening in the AI field is that it's reducing the number of people that are coming in through standard requirements. So like people are not excited to study computer science anymore, or people don't want to do a boot camp because at the end of the day, it's like companies don't want to hire junior developers because they're like AI can do everything the junior developer is doing. So if that junior developer is going to vibe code by themselves and they're building their own product and they're learning, that way we're ensuring that like people in tech, it can still keep, we can retain the human aspect in tech and we're not just like phasing everybody out because of AI. So I, for one, I'm a big fan of vibe coding because everybody will have to learn a lesson one way or another.
Yeah, for sure. So, what would you say is the one thing, the top thing you want the audience to take away today from this discussion we've been having?
Yeah, sure. So I would say if you are using AI, whether you have been developing for years now or you just get into vibe coding, just care about the product you're building. Remember that at the end of the day, you are building this thing for somebody else to use. If you're building your own tool just for your own personal use, have fun with it. Do whatever you want. Put red text on a blue background. Nobody's going to stop you if that's what you like. But if you are building something that is going to be used by multiple people, if your goal is to build a globally renowned product, make sure this product is useful for everybody and it's being able to be used by everybody. Prompt your agents to make things accessible. Include workflow instructions to care about things like accessibility or performance or using semantic elements in place of custom implementations. When you are testing for things, test with different tools. Don't just use like a keypad, test with a mouse, download a screen reader. One thing I like to tell people is whenever I do an accessibility workshop, I'm like, we're going to put like a black overlay on your screen and use a screen reader and a keyboard and see if you can still carry out the basic functionality of your website. Because if you can do that, that is the barest minimum for making an accessible website. So I think those are my tips. It's always think about the people you're building products for, and that is how you get better products. So that would be my, it's not even one thing, but those would be like summarizing
I
tips
love it.
for anyone that's
Love it.
listening.
Yeah, fantastic. So where can people reach out or follow you online if they
Yeah, sure.
want
If
to
you want to
connect?
contact me online, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. So that's Jemima Abu. That's Jemima, last name Abu. So just send me a message on LinkedIn. I do love contacting people. I'm also available on ADP lists if you want to like set up a call or anything. I do love talking about accessibility. So feel free to reach out to me there or anything related to like front-end development or public speaking, yada, yada, yada. Feel free to reach out to me on ADP list. It's same Jemima Abu.
Awesome. Thank you, Jemima, so much for joining me today. It's
No
been a great
worries. Thanks for the
discussion.
time, Michael. It was a really great discussion.
So, thanks for joining us for another episode of Signals. Please be sure to follow Dev Mio at devm.io oder auf Deutsch unter invicta.de.